Okay, so thank you for the invitation. So I'd like to tell you about a relation between topological string and black hole. And those are two subjects that have sort of developed more or less independently of each other. But recently, it was found that they are somewhat closely related. And so I'd like to discuss some of these developments. So first, let me very briefly discuss about topological string. I think many of you know about it, but this is just to set up some notation. So we are interested in computing various quantities that arise from compactification of type 2 string theory on Calabi-Yau manifold. And so the topological string was found to be quite useful for certain exact computation for that. And so because of that, we first start with the wall sheet theory, which is the n equal 2 superconformal single model from Riemann surface to target space. So this is a perturbative string picture. And then what you do is to do first the topologically twisted sigma model. And also we ignore the four-dimensional part of the space-time altogether. We'll be considering only the constant part of a field. And then we compute, we couple it to this system to topological gravity on the Riemann surface. And so basically this is a partial function, G-loop partial function of topological string. Integrated over the moduli space of Riemann surface. So this is the standard formula for the string amplitude, except that instead of anti-ghost B, I'm using this one of the supercurrent. And then, moreover, we are going to sum this over all genera by introducing some coupling constant here, and then exponentiate it to give you some partition function. So this is the topological string partition function that I'm going to use. I should note that this is, of course, a function of the moduli of the Calabi-Yau, but the moduli information of the worksheet has been integrated out. Okay? So this series is typically not summable, and it's asymptotic and often not summable, so we want to understand whether there is no perturbative completion or not, and that's a part of the story that I'm going to tell you today. There is a very interesting story relating this the topological string partition function to some notion of wave function. And this has been rather mysterious aspect of topological string. And this is actually recently nicely tied to the black hole quantum state, et cetera. So I want to tell you about that first. So let me start with the topological B model. And those are useful for actually computing quantity for type 2B. And so moduli space of target Calabi-Yau consists of complex structure of Calabi-Yau space and also topological string coupling. And so those are the kind of things that this topological partition function depends on. It depends explicitly on the coupling constant, but each loop partition function depends on the moduli of the Calabi-Yau. Okay? So this is, if you like, 2H1 plus 1 dimensional space. And then, in fact, the tangent space to this moduli space is nothing but the third cohomology. Okay? And for given background, so once you specify this, you can consider perturbing this by turning on these appropriate chiral operator to go in the tangent direction. Okay? So then in fact, the, naturally, you can think of this partition function as function of actually three sets of variables. The Z and Z bar representing where you started with, and the extra holomorphic one, which describes this tangent deformation to the tangent direction at each given point. Well, you might say that, well, this description is sort of redundant, because you'd say that, well, shifting X is the same as shifting Z appropriately, so there is some redundancy to it. But this also causes some problem because you can shift X and then you can compensate for that by shifting Z appropriately. But there is a Z bar in it, which you don't shift in this way. So there is some kind of dependence on the background. So this has actually led to this interpretation that topological string partition function is a wave function in the following sense. So this is closely related to the behavior of this topological string partition function called holomorphic anomaly equation, which was first derived in our paper, I think 13 years ago or so. But Witten immediately interpreted by looking at this equation, he says, hey, this looks like Gauss law constraint of the Chan-Simon theory. And based on that, he gave the following interpretation, which was further refined by Digraph, Verinde, and Vonk in a few years ago. Anyway, so So this is the equation that you can write down. So this is called the holomorphic anomaly equation. The first equation is sort of obvious and just states a fact that I mentioned, namely that if you shift x in the tangential direction, so that this derivative here is the same as shifting the holomorphic part of the background here. Okay, so this is a very intuitive equation. The second equation is less intuitive and very mysterious, and this is really the content of holomorphic anomaly equation. Basically, this x dependence also controls the z bar dependence. This is what this equation says. So not only that you know the z dependence by knowing the x dependence, but if you know the x dependence, you can also know about z bar dependence. So therefore, this means, since this is a first order derivative in the base, so if you know the wave function at a given point on the moduli space, you can know about wave function, the partial function in any other point. So that's the content of this equation. So let me give you a more precise interpretation of what it is. So remember that we are considering the moduli space of the theory, and then this x lives on the tangent space. Okay? So the interpretation that which I'm going to clarify further here is that for each point, so this is a picture, this is a caricature of the tangent space, the moduli space of the Carabiel, and at each point of the moduli, you have a tangent space to it. And in each tangent space, there is a Hilbert space that you can quantize. You can quantize this tangent space because this is H3, and H3 has a natural symplectic form. This is exactly the half of the dimension. So the 3 is exactly the half of the dimension of the Carabiel space. So there is a natural symplectic form that you can write down, which is an integral of omega I wedge omega j bar integrated over Carabiel space. So this gives a symplectic form. So if you have a symplectic form, you can quantize. You can regard this as a phase space and quantize it. And that's what I mean by this first part of the story. So each part, you have a Hilbert space. Okay. So and then a holomorphic anomaly equation is just saying that if you know a state at this Hilbert space, you can use this equation to parallel transport a state here to a state there. So therefore, you have sort of for each state in this Hilbert space here, you have a Hilbert state in the entire Hilbert entire moduli space of Carabiel space. You have a question?
Yeah, I mean, it looks very strange. I mean, because as you say, you could just start without x, right? You could just start with things depending on z, z bar. And it would seem that you have all the information, because you will have considered all of the possible Carabiel backgrounds. And so what was the motivation for introducing x in the first place, introducing this redundancy? Because you want to talk about somehow quantizing the tangent space?
So I'm going to, I would like to interpret that topological wave function as actually quantized state for that appear in the quantization of H3. So there is a wave function associated to quantization of H3. H3 is a flat space, and it has a symplectic form. So you can quantize it.
But that's not, I mean, what are you quantizing? It's not a string. You're not quantizing strings anymore, right?
Right, we're not quantizing
the Carabiel space.
We are quantizing, if you like, the tangent space to the Carabiel space.
But what's the Hamiltonian?
Okay, so we'll talk about that later. But we don't have to have a Hamiltonian to quantize the system. Well, Hamiltonian is helpful to, for example, select the ground state and things like that. So then we have to discuss. So this Hilbert space is an infinite dimensional because this is quantizing Hilbert space. So then you ask what is special about this topological string wave function, because there is a unique wave function associated to quantizing the topological string. So what is this wave function among infinitely many dimensional Hilbert space? So we'll discuss that later. Okay, but anyway, but you understand that you can quantize H3, and then if you do that, then you can define a state at each point on the moduli space. Now, what does this equation mean? Well, what it means is the following. If you have a symplectic structure, then you have to specify momentum and conjugate, and you declare that wave function depends only on the coordinate, and then the conjugate momentum is described as a derivative operator. And if you fix the complex structure of the Carabiel by sitting at a particular point on the moduli space, there is a natural separation of coordinate and momenta by using the holomorphic structure. So you can just say that holomorphic component of x is a coordinate, and the anti-holomorphic one is a momenta. Okay? So then that way you can quantize the system, you can define wave function. But that separation of coordinate and momenta depends on where you are. Okay, so because you are using the complex structure of the Calabi-Yau to define the holomorphic splitting of S3 into holomorphic part and anti-holomorphic part. So the way that you quantize it depends on the position. But if you think that you are quantizing H3 to begin with, the definition of H3 itself does not depend on the complex structure. It is this artificial separation of holomorphic and anti-holomorphic part that is from the choice of complex structure. So that means that if you have a unique state, if you have given state for the consideration of H3, then this artificial separation, the fact that you have different Hilbert space at different point is basically due to the artificial separation of left holomorphic and anti-holomorphic component. So there has to be a relation between them. And what happens is that if you change the complex structure, basically what used to be momentum becomes coordinate and things like that. So those are related by Fourier transformation. And this is actually nothing but the infinitesimal version of that Fourier transformation.
Size, the wave function.
So I haven't justified why, but what I'm saying here is that if you make this interpretation, then this is exactly the kind of equation that I didn't say it clearly. So I haven't explained why size the wave function. I didn't give you anything like probabilistic interpretation or anything, which I'm going to do later. But what I'm doing here is that suppose there is a wave function that is obtained by quantizing H3.
Why wouldn't that wave function just depend on Z?
Oh, okay, so the wave function, so the thing is that at each given point Z, I have H3, and it is H3 that I'm quantizing. So therefore, the resulting wave function is a function of holomorphic coordinate of X, okay? But that way of quantizing, it depends on where you are. So therefore, there is additional dependence here. Okay. And if you do that, then you can derive how Z dependence and X dependence can mix with each other. And this is the equation that you obtain from that. And so all I'm saying is that it turns out that these are exactly the equations that topological string partial function obeys. So that led us to natural interpretation that topological string wave function is a wave function. Okay. So the question is that what is this wave function good for? Okay. So let me summarize. So I think that so we started out by defining topological string partial function as the sum over genesis, but it turns out that this satisfies exactly the kind of relation that we expect for wave function to obey, a wave function for the quantization of H3 to obey.
That means there are certain conditions on the C's.
Sorry?
There are certain conditions on the C's that this be interpreted.
On the C's?
Yeah, in the holomorphic anomaly.
Right. Yes.
I mean, what do you have to check to determine that it's a wave function?
Okay, well, so this is already a check. So this is already a statement. So namely, so what all I'm saying is that because topological string partial function satisfies this, we are fully entitled to interpret partial function as a wave function. That's already settled. There is no issue about it. Because if you have a wave function for quantization of H3, then it should, so the necessary and sufficient condition for that to make sense is that this satisfies this equation.
Well, doesn't it depend on what the C's are?
I'm sorry. So C depends on Z. C is a Yukawa coupling that depends on Z. So this equation, there are also other coefficients. All of these are dependent on Z. So this is a first order differential equation for Z and second order in X with coefficient which depends on Z.
And any set of coefficients, Cijk, allows this interpretation, or the Cijk's
response? Yeah, so this structure is totally consistent from that. You can derive this equation with C's and all these from this interpretation.
But do you derive a specific form of the C?
Yeah, a specific form of C, it can be derived either from holomorphic anomaly equation by directly working out this worldsheet Wada-Takahashi identity, or understanding how the parallel transformation works between Hilbert spaces. So you have two different derivations of the same equation. The first was assuming that this is a state for the wave computation, and the other was this worksheet computation. They agree. So this already establishes that this has an interpretation of the wave function. So the question is that what is this good for? So we have a wave function for naturally associated to the considerational tangent space to the Calabi-Yau. And so what is this good for? Well, for example, what is a Hamiltonian? But as a topological string, we don't have that. It's hard to come up with that interpretation because we have exhausted all the dimensions. Topological string is defined in six dimensions. We know that to have a Hamiltonian, we need to have one more time. And so where is the time, right? So. And so one of the motivation for example, people working on topological M theory, trying to introduce additional time to the, but actually, if you go back to this paper in 12 or 13 years ago, there was already a time because this is a quantity that actually computes superpotential time for Calabi-Yau compactification of type 2 string. So not only we have six dimensions, actually we have all four additional dimensions waiting for us. So if we understand what this kind of relation, so the natural question is that can we understand this wave function from this point of view, from the physics of 10 dimension rather than 6 dimension, and can we interpret this Poisson function as a physical wave function in type 2 string? So it is this interpretation that I would like to propose today.
So this sort of as a non-commutative.
So H3 is, so in some sense you can say that, well, this wave function is treating this H3 as non-commutative. Mm-hmm. So you can ask where that non-commutativity come from this context also. So I was not planning to discuss that, we can discuss that later. Okay, so we have been, gradually realize that actually this interpretation of topological string Poisson function as physical computing physical object, a physical quantity in type 2 string compactification has been very useful. So I have been trying to understand this from this kind of concept, and so this is what we came up with. So the first step in understanding it is to use this topological string Poisson function to relate that to black hole entropy computation. So let me first describe that. So again, I still stick to this type 2b string context. So we compactify type 2b string on Calabi-Yau space times, and then you have these four flat directions. Type 2b string has various Ramon form, and upon compactification, you have this many gauge field coming. Because, so Ramon potential, and so if you have Ramon four form gives rise to Ramon five form field strength. But if you have four form, and if you have three cycle, that give in compact space, that gives rise to gauge field in four dimension. And you have this many, so this is the dimension of H3. So this you have this many homology cycle in Calabi-Yau, so that gives rise to these gauge fields. Okay, and so if you have D-brain wrapping on these cycles, then you generate various particles in four dimensions, which are electrically and magnetically charged. And let me introduce the following notation. So I have H3, which has these cycles. Actually, H3, the real dimension of H3 is twice as many as this. And then I choose a symplectic basis, just like alpha and beta cycle of the Riemann surface, so that A's do not intersect with each other, B do not intersect with each other, and A and B intersect once with each other. And this is a reflection of the fact that if you wrap D-brain on this cycle, you can create particles with various charges. But you have twice as many cycles as the number of gauge fields. And it's because depending on which cycle you wrap D-brain on, you can either have electric charge or magnetic charge with respect to these gauge fields. And so if you wrap gauge, so in particular choice of the gauge field, you can say that if you wrap gauge field D-brain Q times around A cycle, you have a BPS particle with electric charge Q. And if you wrap it on B cycle, you get a magnetic particle like that. So you have, so the wrapping D3 brain on this cycle gives rise to this electrically and magnetically charged particle in four dimension. And those give rise to BPS black hole in four dimension.
So the Kähler moduli don't play any role,
and this is reflected the fact that complex moduli are fixed by attractor mechanism near the horizon, whereas scalar moduli can have arbitrary value. So the entropy should not depend on the scalar moduli, because scalar moduli is a continuously varying parameter, but we expect entropy to count the number of state. So if there is a dependence on continuously varying parameters, then that would be in contradiction with integrality, the fact that the number of state are integers. So we have come up with the following conjecture. So omega, suppose omega is a number of ground state of this BPS black hole with charge P and Q. So we are proposing that, well, if you do Laplace transform with respect to electric charges, and then you get some function object which depends on P and electric potential phi, consider this holomorphic combination of that, and I say that this is actually the absolute value square of the topological string wave function. Okay? So that's a conjecture. So let me specify a little bit more detail. So this is basically the same content as this, but expanded a little bit more. So this is a black hole partition function. So if you like, this is the sort of grand canonical ensemble of a black hole, and we introduce magnetic charge P and electric charge Q, but then sum over Q with a fixed chemical potential, or static electric potential, if you like. And on the other hand, the perturbative topological string partition function is a function of this X, which is an element of H3. And in particular, if you take the ratio of this, it gives rise to the complex structure of a Calabi-Yau space. And then you can choose any one of these X as inverse of string coupling constant. And the conjecture is that these two are related like this. Okay. So why we believe that? Well, there was some earlier work that has led to this conjecture. So first step was, of course, I mentioned earlier, the topological string partition function is a priori related to some physical object in four dimensions. Now, what specifically is that this? So Cardoso, DeWitt, and Mohaupt, in a series of very nice work, shows that you can use exactly the kind of superpotential term that arises from topological string computation to compute perturbative string loop corrections to the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy formula. So at the string tree level, we know that the entropy of black hole is a quota of the area of the horizon. But this formula is going to be corrected by string loop effect. But they show that, in fact, they are very naturally captured by topological string amplitude. And so what we did was reorganize their computation to look at it a little bit more nice. So define F, capital F, as log of absolute value square of the topological string partition function, or stated in another way, sum of this plus complex conjugate of that. Okay. So size equal to exponential of this. So therefore, this is just F plus F bar, if you like. And so then black hole attractor equation. So I mentioned earlier that if you go to the horizon of the black hole, the complex structure of the Calabi-Yau is fixed. Complex moduli of the Calabi-Yau give rise to scalar field in four dimensions. And these are massless. But actually, it takes the fixed value at the horizon. And classically, there is a formula which gives you exactly what that is. And that, again, is quantum corrected. But this is actually exact quantum corrected formula for the attractor equation. So the real part of X still remains as a magnetic charge. But the imaginary part is rather nonlinearly related to the electric charge in this way. And then the formula that these people wrote can be actually rewritten in a nice way like that, where the fully to all order string loop correction corrected black hole entropy is just given by the Legendre transform of topological string amplitude like that. Okay? So actually, it is quite natural because the topological string partition function is naturally a function of these.
They're rewriting their work.
Yes.
Now, how did they possibly say something to all orders in string
partition? Well, why? So because they argued that so you have this low energy effective theory action, mm-hmm. for the which comes from the type 2 string compactified on the Calabi-Yau space. So you have in four dimensions some low energy effective action. So the, at three level, you have this Einstein term and the kinetic term for the scalar field, etc. And those are quantum corrected, and those give rise to some higher curvature corrections. And there are subclass of these terms that are completely controlled by topological string amplitude. Okay, so it's not all the terms that you have, but there are some subclass of those that you can completely compute. And they argue that those are the only terms that are relevant.
How do they argue?
So, excuse me? So, so that is a part actually that I don't know of any rigorous argument for why those are the only terms that contribute.
You're saying that all the curvature corrections that are not coming from the topological string don't contribute to the Hawking Bekenstein energy?
That's what they argue.
Based on
some supersymmetry argument. So we are talking about BPS black hole. And so it preserves half of the supersymmetry, which actually get enhanced to the full supersymmetry near the horizon. So you have lots of supersymmetry. So they appeal to supersymmetry to argue that these are the only subset of low energy effective theory terms contribute. And if you they just look at those subclass of terms and apply the generalized formula generalization of Bekenstein formula due to Bob Ward, I think, appropriate for this higher derivative theory to arrive at this expression. And so there are several reasons that to believe that is correct. But one strong reason is that other terms depends on the Kähler moduli. And so if entropy depended if those terms are relevant, then entropy would depend on the value of the Kähler moduli, which would be in contradiction with what we expect.
If it depends continuously.
Right, if it depends on continuously, and I think they do, because there are no known attractor mechanisms for Kähler moduli in this problem. And I think that this has to be made more rigorous, and it can be made more rigorous, that based because of there has to be some supersymmetry reason why only this subclass of terms should contribute. And but I don't know. Perhaps some people know. I just don't know of a rigorous way to derive it. And it'd be nice to know that. There probably can be some argument. For example, this is a possible way to show it. So you can probably show that deforming Kähler moduli should not modify the number of state of the black hole. So then probably you can introduce some parameter in front of other terms in the effective action, and show that correcting, modifying these terms can be absorbed, rescaling of these terms can be absorbed into Kähler moduli or something, so therefore can get rid of those other terms. I think the argument along the line should be possible. So anyway, so we just took their claim as a fact, and from that, so basically what all we did was, well, look like a Legendre transform. So the rigorous quantum version of that should be Laplace transform. That was the argument, okay? And so there is actually logical jump here, because why Legendre transform should become Laplace transform? I mean, this sounds natural, because that's what we learn in statistical mechanics. But this also is something that needs to be justified. And in fact, there are a series of papers by Ashok Sen recently where he tried to make this point more rigorous by, through some explicit examples. And in fact, I just saw his paper. He posted a paper today. So I think that. So anyway, so what we do is that what I'm going to do is just assume that this is correct, and I'm going to do two things. One is to use this conjecture to give interpretation of this wave function. And another, later, if I have time, is to give an example where this actually works. That you can compute both sides exactly. There are examples in which you can compute topological Poisson function exactly to all order in the perturbative expansion. And then in the same model, you can compute the number of state exactly, and so you can compare. And so I'll give you some example in which we can. I can show that how this actually works in this example. Okay, so is there any question about the statement of the conjecture. Okay, so first let me come back to the earlier question. So this was a mathematical statement. So we have this topological string partition function, which satisfies the same equation as any wave function of H3, consideration of H3 should satisfy. And this wave function appears here. So this seemed like a natural avenue to try to give a physical interpretation of this wave function. And in particular, why it should be absolute value squared and things like that. So let me try to discuss that here. So relation between entropy and wave function. You can actually, so this, since this is a Laplace transform, so at least at the level of rigor that we are doing this discussion here, we can invert this Laplace transform. So write omega as integral of x instead. And so we can write it in, we can invert this Laplace transform to write number of state of the black hole as square of the topological string partition function. So here, actually, I multiply some extra factor which depends on P and Q. But the main non-trivial part is this wave function here, topological string partition function here. And you can just rewrite this conjecture in this way. Okay. And so you can say that this is a flux-changing operator. Well, I didn't explain what I mean by flux. But P and Q are the charges of the black hole, which if you go to near the horizon becomes flux of Ramon-Ramon field. The black hole generate, emanate the Ramon-Ramon fluxes. So these P and Q can be also called as a flux. And so you can say that this is a flux-changing operator because if you want to compute entropy associated to different number of P and Q, you just have to adjust this exponential factor. So you can call this a flux-changing operator. And we'll see that there are actually some additional interpretation of this later. And this is a topological string partition function. Now, so this relation will basically... This
is normalized. So it's omega is 1 and PQ are 0. That's normalization.
So that's an interesting question. So... So this is normalized up to some constant that is independent of P and Q. Yes. So left-hand side basically is a number of BPS state of black hole. So this is some kind of Witt index or helicity trace, supersymmetric helicity trace, over the Hilbert space of the black hole. Okay. So but black hole is a point-like object in four dimension. So you can... you may imagine that there is one-dimensional quantum mechanics, 0 plus one-dimensional quantum mechanics, whose quantization count this number of state.
So this is not strictly the entropy then? This is some index?
Yeah, this is some kind of index, well, because it only count the number of BPS ground state.
Oh, it's only the BPS.
Yeah, so this is counting the number of ground state of the extremal black hole. And And in fact, it is kind of interesting. So omega is counted with sign. And in fact, this relation has been known as Wigner transform in the early days of quantum mechanics. So Wigner tried to come up with interpretation of quantum mechanics in terms of phase space rather than the artificial separation of position and the coordinate. So he came up with a transform of wave function, basically square of the wave function, and do this kind of Laplace transform to define variable which is depends on the phase space. And then he formulated the entire quantum mechanics in terms of some kind of density on the phase space. And the one of the problems that people had with this formulation...
Which isn't positive.
Right, but one of the problems people had was that the resulting object was not a positive definite. And in fact, you can show rigorously that only ground state of harmonic oscillator has Wigner transform, which has positive definite quantity. But apparently, this Wigner transform has been found recently very useful in quantum optics and things like that, where people call omega with negative value as very quantum. But I would call, in view of this, we should call that as very fermionic, because it is a dominantly fermionic state that has a negative value because of this index-type structure.
So let me ask you my understanding. The statement is that the index on the right gives exactly the set of BPS ground states, or it's sort of count some of the BPS ground stations as positive sign and some of the.
You can show that the long representation of supersymmetry get canceled out because of the sign. So therefore only BPS one contribute.
But it always counts all the short representations with positive sign.
Depends on what the highest spin is.
Uh-huh.
Right. So there are some fermionic BPS and bosonic ones. And
so when you add those up, you don't necessarily get the exact number of BPS ground stage to the black hole?
So it's counted with signs. But I think that it is in
so it sums over all the ground stage, it doesn't sum up, but it sums over some of them with weight minus one and some with weight plus one.
Right, but it looks like the fact that it agrees with the entropy computation suggests that actually in macroscopic case that the difference is not so significant.
For these black holes.
Right.
Yeah, but you're saying all the corrections agree.
Yes.
So I'm a little confused. So the number of BPS stages.
Yes.
Is not this. This has some minus signs. In
right.
It. Okay. But you're saying the black hole.
Wasn't that true of Boff and Strominger as well?
Excuse me?
Wasn't that true of?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
So the same criticism agrees with. Sorry.
Because they're getting something which is true to all orders and one over the charges. So. But the black hole entropy was not supposed to have some minus signs in there.
Well, we are motivated initially by this computation, which was really macroscopic computation and perturbative computation. And we are sort of taking this as experimental data to formulate this conjecture, which we claim to be hold beyond perturbative expansion. Also, I would like to make some clarification about the right-hand side. Also,
so
it's not. So I don't think that at this level of derivation, you can never claim that you are actually computing the number of state or counting state with signs.
Hawking and Bekenstein were doing some semi-classical things, so that was clearly just the leading term.
Right.
But if all of this is right, you're saying that we should stop calling it a black hole entropy and start calling it a black hole index, because in some sense it's not strictly the number of states, it's there's some minus signs there.
I think that it is possible that there are other computations you can do. For example, you can try to compute there may be other computation you can do. For example, it is possible that if you want to count the number of states with positive sign and including non-BPS state, you may have to include other terms in the low energy effective action that we ignored. So this was assuming that you can only consider a subset of low energy effective theory term. So there was an assumption there.
Certainly if you go not extremal, I think you will have to include more terms.
Right.
But if you stay extremal and BPS, there's still another quantity, which is the strict number of BPS.
Yeah, but I don't think that this computation has been precisely speaking. I don't see any precise argument to show that one is counting one or the other from this computation, because there are some assumptions that goes into the computation, that is that you can consider the subset of low energy effective theory terms. So I think one can easily assume a scenario in which that give rise, that kind of computation give rise to an index, and then there is yet another computation that you can do taking into account all other terms in low energy effective action, and that count the number of non-BPS state as well. And that's possible because, for example, the number of non-BPS state can change as you change the Kähler moduli, for example. So it can depend more non-trivially on other data. So I think that is possible. So I don't think that there is any logical contradiction with saying that this is computing the index of the black hole.
Wait, by supersymmetry, the black hole states come in multiples, so they're equal number of fermionic and bosonic states. So there must be some kind of graded index.
Yeah, so that's why I put some symbol over here, which I didn't explain.
I was wondering if that
was. Okay, so this is on the left hand side. And so there is something like ADS-CFT correspondence. So if you go to near the horizon black hole, actually you have ADS 2 times S 2 times Calabi-Yau space. So that means that this index can also be computed by doing some bulk computation. And I'm claiming that bulk computation is given on the right-hand side. OK, so let me clarify this point in the next transparency.
Can you clarify the right-hand side first? On the previous slide, psi top was a function of x, which was p plus I phi or something like that here.
Right.
Here it's a function of phi, which is what? It's some sort of complex variable here?
Yeah, no, phi. So I'm just substituting phi in the x dependence here.
So phi is just a generic homomorphic variable.
Yeah, so phi is a generic complex variable, which, of course, you have to specify where you take a contour.
Okay. So the phi totals are independent then?
Phi tilde is the derivative of phi. Okay. It's conjugate. So in fact, therefore, phi is shifting. So you can see that actually the way it works is that phi tilde, so this is a fancy way of writing what I wrote over there, actually. So earlier I wrote that x is equal to p plus I phi.
Right.
So therefore, if you shift phi by the amount of minus I pi p, then you get this, right? So this is exactly the derivative operator that you have in the exponent. So this is actually a fancy way to write what I have already written over there. So let me tell you a little bit about the near horizon geometry of black hole. So if you go near the horizon black hole, the geometry is ADS 2 times S2 times Carabiel, just like near horizon geometry of the D3 brain is ADS 5 cross S5. So it's a similar phenomena. And this Raman-Raman form becomes a 5-form flux on S5 times Carabiel space. And so you can regard this as an example of flux compactification. But the flux compactification, so normally we consider flux compactification on Carabiel spacetime to four-dimensional anti-digital space, and then try to make it digital space by breaking supersymmetry, et cetera. But you might as well consider flux compactification with different fluxes. So you can think of what we are doing here as a flux compactification down to two dimension with fluxes on S2 times Carabiel 3. And in fact, you can rederive this attractor equation using the standard Gukov, generalizing the standard Gukov buffer Witten superpotential. So in the case of compactification down to four dimension, you have three-form flux wedged with holomorphic three-form. And here I'm just generalizing this by considering five-form flux. But the argument is the same. You just have to extrematize the potential, and you reproduce this classical attractor equation. And so this is ADS2, and you have this Poincaré coordinate. So you have this horizon over here. If you do the weak rotation, you get the standard Poincaré disk, where the time is flowing in this way and this point. What used to be the horizon here becomes fixed point. I'm calling this horizon because this is really where the horizon was before you take the near horizon limit. And so the number of black hole state is basically the trace of this times e to the minus beta h, but h is going in this way. So basically, you are doing periodic identification of this Poincaré disk around this Euclidean time, which gives rise to this kind of funnel. And
I'm sorry, so I was confused about this. Why are you periodically identifying time again?
Well, because we are doing this computation, this h is a translation.
Yeah, but what is beta?
Oh, beta, so in this case, since we are computing index, so beta, you don't have to specify what the beta is. The result is independent of beta. But we need some regularization to make sense of this.
So it's a regularization.
Regularization, but there is a choice here. So in the case of ADS, you can say that, well, there are several times, so why am I choosing this particular time? Well, the reason that I'm choosing this particular time is that it is this Hamiltonian that commutes with the supercharges. So for example, the global Hamiltonian does not commute with supercharge. So we're forced to make this kind of periodic identification.
OK, I was happy with the time, but beta, extremal black holes at zero temperature.
Right. So that means that this is independent of beta. Zero temperature means that you can do the periodic identification in the imaginary time direction at any period as you like.
You can.
Right? Because the time, zero temperature means that the imaginary time direction is not contractible. So that means that we can make any periodic identification, and so that's a beta, and the answer should not depend on beta.
What are the boundary conditions on the fermions going around the circle?
Oh, that is dictated by minus 1 to the f, so that means that it has to have a Raman boundary condition.
Periodic.
The supersymmetry preserving boundary condition. That would be an invariant way to say it.
Okay,
so we are saying that, well, this is given by this, but it is also given by so this should be given by this computation in the bulk. But we are saying that that is given by absolute value square. So it is natural, therefore, to interpret this topological string wave topological string partition function as computing the wave function where basically you look at this picture on the sideways, that Euclidean type is now flowing in this direction, and you fix the boundary condition at the infinity to be at the attractor point, and then you choose the boundary condition at the middle to be arbitrary, allowed it to fluctuate, and you define this as a wave function. And the absolute value square then of that integrated over the coordinate should give rise to this partial function. And in fact, this is an idea like that is not itself is not new in the sense that something like that has been suggested earlier by De Boer, Fairinde, and Fairinde in relation to ADS-CFT renormalization group flow of ADS-CFT correspondence. So they argue that, that if you consider generate, so in the ADS-CFT correspondence, there is a relation between generating function, the correlation function, and the partial function. But they instead try to interpret as this generating function, correlation function, as a wave function, and in fact they argue that the classical, semi-classical level, that it satisfies the Wheeler-Dewitt equation. And so what we are saying is that in fact, in this context, you can generalize this to all order in string loop corrections by replacing this tree-level effective action by topological string partial function.
Okay. This diagram represents, it seemed like at one point I thought you were saying that this diagram represents the partition function, which
right.
is the square of the topological, I thought you were saying this diagram represents this index calculation.
Yes. No, but this is the half of that diagram.
I see.
Right.
But the thing that I would naturally get by writing down a path integral making the periodic identification has a very similar looking diagram. Why does this one happen then?
Well, because here we are not fixing any, so we are doing the functional integral on the entire Antilithal space. So what we are doing here is to artificially cut this into half and regard that half as a wave function.
But when you say half, you don't mean two pieces that are symmetric. You mean just kind of in the middle and take
right, this side and that side. Right.
And then when I square this, it gives both sides?
Yes, that's the idea. And it does satisfy at the semi-classical level the Wheeler-Dewitt equation.
Are you going to explain why when I square it, I get not only the big piece of the cone, but the little piece of the cone as well?
Well, actually, I'm only giving you some evidences that this satisfies the expected property. So let me try to tell you about that. So we are doing this sort of flux compactification down to two dimension. And the compactification to two dimension is a very special thing because if you compactify to two dimension, basically you allow most of the field to fluctuate very wildly. There is Coleman's theorem, which prohibits the scalar field to have some fixed vacuum value. And so it is natural to regard this wave function as giving some amplitude probability for the Calabi-Yau space to have some particular complex moduli. And in fact, you can show that semi-classically, this wave function is very much peaked around the point where the attractor equation specifies the Calabi-Yau moduli to be. But in fact, for large but finite PQ, you can see some kind of quantum fluctuation from this classical attractor value. But you can also ask whether this wave function allows the possibility of changing P and Q. And this is interesting because if there is a physical reason of why we can use this wave function to compare different value of P and Q, it means that this is a wave function that is defined on the entire landscape of this compactification. So this gives rise to a natural notion of wave function on the landscape of flux compactification. Although we are doing this for compactification down to two dimension, you can equally imagine that there is such a wave function to compactification to four dimension. So this would be an interesting toy model for that. And I'm going to argue that in fact it makes sense not only to for fixed PQ compare different value of Calabi-Yau moduli, but there is so this is related to the question that David asked, namely that it makes sense to compare different value of PQ as giving you a different weight for the flux compactification. So let me give you one reason for that. So So we are compactifying R4 to Carabiel times R4. And here you have a vector multiplet field, which consists of scalar field, complex scalar field, and gauge field associated to it. But we are here further compactifying it on the circle. So actually, we are compactifying on Carabiel space times S1 times R3. And if you compactify this to three dimension, then in fact, the vector multiplet becomes a hypermultiplet, if you like. So in addition to this, the gauge field in three dimension is equivalent to scalar field. So if you compactify this to three dimension, you have scalar field, but also the holonomy of this gauge field will give you some scalar field. And this will be an electric potential. But there is also magnetic potential associated to it, which you may also think of as a dual of gauge field in three dimension. So you have actually two complex scalar field, or four real scalar field. So a priori, if you compactify the string theory on this circle times Euclidean dimension direction, wave function should be function of all these three variables. So one should be able to then compare different value of phis as well as x. But these phis are nothing but the conjugate of electric and magnetic charges, exactly because these are phi is the holonomy of the gauge field. So that is measuring the electric charge. And phi tilde is the magnetic, the holonomy of the magnetic potential, which is dual to p. So that means that wave function that we derive from the topological string amplitude should be regarded as a function on the entire landscape of string vacuum. Different amount of fluxes are weighted by the entropy of the black hole.
When you say the entire landscape, this is a very special set of configurations, right? I mean,
this is by landscape, I mean, in this case, the landscape of string vacuum that you obtain by compactifying the type 2B string on Carabiel times S3 with five form fluxes.
So they're all supersymmetric.
Those are all supersymmetric.
Right. So
they all have the same energy.
Right.
So if you like, if you try to construct a KKLT model in three step of going from fixing the complex moduli first and then fix scalar moduli and then break supersymmetry, this is just the first step of this construction. So I'm claiming that this is giving you the a priori wave function on this first step. Okay. So you can ask, well, if you ask what is a relative prior weight for different amount of fluxes, you can fix the flux and integrate over the information about Carabiel moduli, right? But I just said that this is given by black hole entropy. So this suggests that there is a natural weight that you can assign for the probability of each flux to appear. And if you take this as a wave function of universe.
It should be psi squared.
Yeah, psi squared. Yeah, so I ignore. I forgot to write square over here. Thank you.
So the most likely state is the one with arbitrarily large p.
That, well, so in this particular case, arbitrary large and p and q, namely small cosmological constant, will be favored. I think the reason is similar to the reason that in the Hartle-Hawking wave function, the small cosmological constant is favored.
This is two-dimensional
cosmological.
Two-dimensional
cosmological. Right. So namely, it's either radius of S2 or the curvature radius of S2. Or inverse of that, excuse me.
Isn't that square?
Yeah. I forgot to write square over here. I'm sorry. Now, so far, the story has been at the level of string perturbation theory. So there is an ambiguity of whether it is actually a Legendre transform or Laplace transform, or whether we are actually counting the number of state, honest number of state, or the graded number of state. And so those issues is rather murky if you are in the string perturbation theory. So the string perturbative expansion is the same as asymptotic expansion in one of the charges, which you, if you like, in the gauge theory language, it is like a large and asymptotic expansion in the dual gauge theory language. So you can ask what happens if we go beyond the perturbative expansion. So you say that in the large and asymptotic expansion, the kind of absolute value square structure would change, and what does it mean to string perturbation theory? So there is some idea about that that I was just discussing with Joe and Gary before the seminar, and I'd be happy to discuss with you about that in private, but not recorded. So in the remaining 1 minute or so, let me, actually I started 5 minutes later, I guess, but let me give you some example where we can compute both on side and see how this works. So I'm switching the story. So this, I'm going to give you an example in A model, because it is in these cases where the recent progress in mathematics have allowed us to actually compute the topological string amplitude to all order in perturbation theory. So instead of considering D3 brain, we are considering all the even brains. And these equations are the same. And we consider this particular Calabial space, which is you start with a Riemann surface of fixed genus G and consider product of line bundle. So you have a two-dimensional vector bundle over fixed Riemann surface. So this is not the worksheet genus, but the target part of the target space. And the total space of this is Calabial. You can put the rich flat Kähler metric on it. And the reason that we took this is that the topological string amplitude is computed to all order in genus expansion by these maximum. So this is a very beautiful piece of work. And so in the black hole side, what we did was to wrap these three brains on this space, and then D4 brain on this space, and so basically half of this fiber. So the base times the one of this fiber direction. So that's two complex dimensional space, and then consider black hole that arises from that. Okay. So it turns out that so if you do that, so if you have n D4 brain, you get four-dimensional gauge theory with un gauge group, and this is as usual n equal 4 gauge theory. And it turns out that you actually can show that if you because of some equivariant reason, that you can reduce it to two-dimensional computation on the base Riemann surface, and it is actually Q deformation of two-dimensional Young Mills. And the amount of deformation is related to the gauge coupling constant. So unfortunately, we cannot independently adjust the gauge coupling constant and Q deformation. So in the case of actually P equals, in the case of G equals zero, actually you can show that this Q deformation becomes irrelevant. So we can compare that with what David and Wattie Taylor did. But in general, this would be a Q deformation of their computation with amount of deformation related to the gauge coupling constant. Okay, so you have this formula, so which I don't have time to explain, but probably David would recognize that this is exactly the kind of formula that they used, except that the dimension of this representation is now Q deformed, like that. And so that's the formula. And so we basically derive this formula by taking into account this additional Q deformation, and then checked that with what mathematicians have already done. So this is supposed to be gauge theory. To begin with, we had n equal 4 gauge theory, and there actually in some cases mathematicians have done the computation. Nakajima and Yoshioka and those people did some work that, and we checked that this expression is consistent with that. So that's a gauge theory statement. But then what you do is just as David and Wattie did, to take the large and asymptotic expansion of that. So this is sum over Young diagram. So if you have a large n, then the Young diagram can have this big portion, big rectangular portion, with small Young diagram over here and here. And then you can write this sum over representation as sum over product of these things. And one of them give rise to holomorphic dependence, and the other give rise to anti-holomorphic dependence. And so what we see is that this is exactly the kind of expression that we want. So we are saying that this absolute value square structure that comes from a topological string partition function is exactly this coming from, in this case, the two side of Young diagrams. So I guess in their case, there was a lot of discussion of exactly what kind of string theory that you are getting. So in this case, in this context of Q deformation, we see that these gauge theories, the string theory that is cross string theory that is dual to Q deformed to the mirrors is exactly the topological string on Calabi-Yau space. So let me summarize. So mixed ensemble of BPS black hole give non-perturbative definition.
You don't have to take in this larger expansion.
Good. So I'd be happy to discuss with you about these things. That so you can ask. So this is a very interesting thing. So exactly. So the thing is that so this is relying on large n factorization. This is not exact answer. And if n is finite, there are corrections. And the question is that, can you understand these corrections from the point of view of Baruch gravity? And so I'd be happy to discuss with you about that later. And so if you take that into account, then this would give a non-perturbative definition of a topological string. And so that'd be interesting to discuss. And so I said that mathematically, topological string function has an interpretation about quantization of a third cohomology of Calabi-Yau threefold. And so we have been looking for what it means, what's Hamiltonian, why we are quantizing this. So I think that we have some partial explanation of this. We claim that this wave function can be naturally interpreted as a wave, Hartle-Hawking type wave function associated to this flux compactification. And we worked out some example where in which this borne out.
You didn't exactly show us that, interesting.
We argued, yes. But there are evidences that it is naturally interpreted as a wave function. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
So there were a lot of questions. Are there any more questions?
Yes. So getting back to this interpretation, so I guess you're working in some mini-superspace approximation?
Right. Well, I will claim that for this computation, this is an exact computation. So we are claiming that actually, in this case, mini-superspace approximation is an exact result.
Because you restrict the BPS states or something?
I think there is a supersymmetry reason for that. That because at least a two order in string loop expansion, this wave function give rise to exact black hole entropy. So it's not an approximation.
Gives rise to the exact index.
Exact index, right. So for this supersymmetric computation, this is a wave.
Huh? Well, shouldn't the wave function, for example, be positive definite instead of having this possibility negative?
So you're asking why this equality is correct. The left-hand side can have indefinite signature, and the right-hand, actually, so the thing is that this is actually not precisely, I skipped several things, but this is not exactly absolute value square. This is sort of twisted product. And so actually, it is actually phi times psi star minus phi, which is partially is why you can get the indefinite sign. There are a lot of questions about this equation that we don't understand. So for example, naively, this is divergent.
But that, if you think of that as the Hartle-Hawking wave function,
right.
Is that the right way to do the convolution?
I think that wave function can be used in different ways. So I think that this product, so the particular product, is a product that you can use to compute this BPS index. And I imagine that if you want to use it to compute the exact precise number of honest number of states, you have to use different inner product, and that would involve not only this mini superspace wave function, but wave function that depends on the full string spectra. There are many things I don't understand. For example, this integral is naively divergent. by just looking at how this behaves exponentially. So you have to understand how this contour is deformed and things like that. And that can also give rise to these additional signs and things like that. And that I don't understand that either. But the but in the large PQ, so perturbatively, these are OK, because perturbative evaluation of this can be done without worrying too much about how the contour is deformed, et cetera. And so it's a question of how this integral is defined non-perturbatively. But non-perturbatively, actually, we expect this structure to be modified also. So I would think of this as a working hypothesis, which is valid perturbative level. And we should be led to discover what the precise equation. So for example, so in models where we can compute this, we can understand what kind of corrections that you get beyond the large and asymptotic expansion. And then we may try to interpret it by appropriately modifying the right hand side.
So when you call this the Hartle-Hawking wave function, again, what you mean is that it's the Euclidean path integral that propagates from some fixed set of attractor values at infinity.
Right.
And then the argument is, I guess, the set of complex structure moduli at some finite place.
Yes.
And where do you slice that? Does it matter where we slice the path integral?
I think that we are. So that is the same as how the Hartle-Hawking wave function is defined, right? So in that case, they consider hemisphere. But actually, you can also ask the question of where you do the slicing. Because the Hartle-Hawking wave function is such that if you take square of that and integrate that, you get a partial function of S4. And you can ask where the slice is. And there is an answer to that. There is an answer to that. That is that, at least semi-classically, if you fix the radius, then there is a you have this radius, so fixed radius of sphere. And if you want to evaluate Hartle-Hawking wave function for fixed radius, then what you do is look for a place where the radius is small r. And there are two places. Right? So Hartle-Hawking wave function is evaluated either as functional integral over here, where this is the radius small r. This is the radius r. Or here. So it is generically a superposition of this and this. And I think there is a discussion of how to make superposition of these two states.
My question is more, what's the analog of the parameter r in your calculation?
It's one of the x. I skipped that part. Maybe I should have explained that. So let's see. Yeah, look at. So if I look at this, so this is a wave function as a function of x. Okay, so x, there are as many x as a complex dimension of H3. So H3 dimension is H2 1 plus 1. So that's 1 plus the complex moduli of the Caraviel. Okay, so if you fix x, then you're fixing the complex moduli of the Caraviel here, but there is one more variable here, and that is actually the radius. So I didn't explain that, but so that's the extra variable. And so that basically tells you where to cut at this semi-classical level. So you fix x, and then basically the ratio of x are Caraviel moduli, and the absolute value of x tells you where to cut.
And there's only one place to cut, or two?
Oh, no, there is only, in this case, there is only one, because it's monotonically decreasing. So there is no ambiguity about that. Yes?
I might be missing something, but there seems to be a logical sort of gap here. On the one hand, this whole sort of picture came from the extremal black hole.
Right.
You were in the near horizon limit, you had an ADS2, and then you had this. So you've already fixed your moduli. You're in this sort of near horizon limit where all these the H2 ones are fixed to the values given by the charges. Now you want to sort of take that, slice it, and now reinterpret it to have those moduli run?
Yes. Right. I think that's correct. Because we know that classically, the moduli has to be fixed. And I think it is also true that in the full ADS space, moduli is fixed. Because actually, in two-dimensional antiliter space, there is no analog of. I think that these two statements are consistent. So let me first tell you, in this context, what it means that moduli are fixed. what it means in the moduli is fixed is this, in my interpretation. So if you go through the same, so if you look about the original paper by Sidney Coleman about the absence of Nambu-Goldstone boson in two dimensions, and you apply the same logic to anti-theta space too, you find that actually the Coleman theorem does not hold in ADS2, because the propagator is infrared cutoff in ADS2. So that means that the scalar field has cannot fluctuate, but has to have a fixed value. And that is actually a reflection of Coleman theorem. But so now coming back, so I'm going to say that given that this description agrees with what you said, I want to say that this also agrees with what I'm saying. And so the way that, so let me tell you why. So we have analytically continued to Euclidean space and periodically identify it. And then the point is that we have periodically identified in time direction, Euclidean time direction, and then looking at it on sideways. And then we have this compact space as opposed to this non-compact space. The space direction is now compact. And in any system, if you compactify down to 0 plus 1 dimension, the scalar field has to fluctuate. So then you have to consider wave function. You cannot, the scalar field cannot have basically the expectation value. I think it is true that if you go toward this direction asymptotically, then the scalar field has to have attractor value, and that's why we have to impose the boundary condition at infinity to be at attractor value. But there is nothing that prevent X from fluctuating inside of ADS.
And last technical question for me anyway. You mentioned that really it's not the squared wave function, it's some twisted product with some minus sign.
Right.
Is that sort of the same as telling us that what you're going to do is put back the other part of the cone and combine them back to make the first picture you had? Or is that?
Well, I think that I have to say that there are a lot of things I don't understand about how actually inner product is derived from this kind of picture. And so I think that this is a conjecture that is consistent with is motivated by this picture, and but it independently works because of other evidences that I listed over here.
So near the late hour, maybe we should thank the
Thank you.